Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. This Is The Kit is the alias of British musician Kate Stables, as well as the band she fronts. Kate and the band This Is The Kit have been active in the music industry for a number of years. They've released a number of albums, namely Krillie Abol in 2008, Wriggle Out of the Restless, 2010-2012, Bashed Out, 2015, Moonshine Freeze, 2017, Off Off On, 2020, and Careful of Your Keepers in 2023. They've released a number of singles and EPs over the years. They are recognized as one of the front runners of the folk rock and alternative rock genre for the last number of years. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Kate from This Is The Kit. Where do we find you in the world? How are you doing and what's happening in your life?
So you can find me in Paris, in France, which is where I live. And I've already forgotten the other questions.
How are you doing and what's happening in your life?
Okay. I'm doing really well, thanks. Quite forgetful. Yeah, doing really good. What am I up to? Just released an album earlier this month. So just doing that, doing this, having nice chats to people about it.
I'm an avid follower of the music charts. And I saw your new album. I think it was in the top 40 on the UK charts. I was like, okay, I want to speak to them. So that's how I came to you guys. Leading off of that, let's rewind all the way back to the beginning. So at whatever age that might be for you as a child, as a teenager, what was the point that you thought, okay, cool, I want to do music, create music, and how has that journey landed up to where we are today?
I guess I started wanting to do music when I started listening to music and then sort of slowly learning how to play the songs of my favorite bands and stuff. I guess I was too superstitious or shy or didn't believe it could happen enough to actually say, I want this to be my job. I always kind of quietly, secretly hoped that it would be a big part of my life. But I never presumed that it would be that I'd be good enough to make a sustainable career out of it.
Okay.
But so it feels amazing that that has happened. So far, that is what the situation is. I've sort of got a sustainable career at the moment.
And where does the name come from?
Yeah, a few different prongs to the name. Partly it's because I very much like the idea of having everything you need with you, like everything you need in life about your person, you know, spoon, knife, flannel, I don't know, whatever people need. So This Is The Kit is partly that, but it's also because growing up my family always called me Kit. It's just one of my names. And so it's partly that because it's my songs. And so it's sort of This Is Me. And I just like the sound. This Is The Kit. I just like saying certain phrases and certain noises is what I enjoy. I mean, that's how I write songs. And that's how I sort of chose the band name as well. Just This Is The Kit. I don't necessarily think of it as a sentence all the time. It's just kind of a one wordy sound to me.
So then you said a little bit earlier, you never thought that it would accumulate to being your job or your career. From when at that point did you lead up to create the band and start?
Yeah, how did this accident happen?
Yes.
Well, I guess it just was sort of gradual, slow fermentation process. Like when I was a teenager, I'd start learning other people's songs and I'd perform them at the local open mic night. Then I'd get braver and do some of my own songs. Then local promoters would like ask me to open for bands that were coming into town and stuff. You know, then I was getting my own gigs after that. And all this time it would kind of be supplemented. I was still at like sixth form college. And then after that I left and got jobs. So I just kind of had jobs and did gigs as well. Then I moved to Bristol and the ratio to jobs to music got a bit smaller. So I was doing more music and a bit less jobs. And then I moved to Paris a few years later and stopped the job completely and just did music and just sort of took that jump. And then it, you know, when you kind of do those sort of risky leaps off the cliff, quite often universe just sort of gives you a cloud to land on. And so, yeah, it's sort of been growing since then. And I guess it started off just me on my own. And then it would be me and whoever was around in the town where I'm playing, friends I knew or whatever. For a long time, it was kind of mainly me and my partner Jesse, just as a duo. And then slowly, our friend Jamie was playing regularly on drums. Then Neil started joining in more on guitar. Then Rosie, a friend of mine from Winchester, where I grew up, was playing a bit of clarinet and doing some singing. And then she took over on the bass. The hardcore got established, and now that's been the band now for a long time. Neil, Jamie, Rosie, and me, and Jesse when he can, because we sort of do parent tag teaming.
So why move to Paris? What was the calling for that?
Just having a look, really. I think it's sort of quite good to live in a foreign country if you get the opportunity, and we did get the opportunity. We had some friends that were living here, and we were working with a record label that some friends were running here, and just thought, let's go and have a look. And then we're sort of still having a look 18-ish years later.
For me, like I'd based in South Africa or live in South Africa, grew up, but I did live in Israel and London for a period just before
Okay,
lockdown. So
wow.
I agree with you because
Yeah.
it opens up your mind, opens up horizons and all those sorts of things. It
Yeah,
just
you learn
opens you
different
up.
stuff.
Yeah,
Yeah, and you realize
absolutely.
how different cities and different countries are. I was really naive coming here. I thought, oh, it'll be a bit like England, but people will be speaking French. But it's really different. Big culture shock, big time.
Okay, interesting. From 0 to a 3 to 4 minute song, what
Right.
is the motivation? Is it an easy process every time? Is it the same process? Is it yourself just writing the music? Let's dive into your creative process and journey.
It feels like it's different every time, but I wonder if I was to sort of leave my body and observe myself writing a song, I'd probably be like, oh, you do it the same every time. You know, I don't know. So it's hard to tell. But basically, I'm someone that writes words down all the time, you know, out and about on the bus or whatever. And eventually, when I sort of carve out a bit of time to do some actual active songwriting, then I'll sit down with my guitar and banjo and try and find music that will go with what I've been writing. And sometimes that happens. And sometimes I just find music that is a new thing that then sprouts its own words that I haven't been working on already. And then, so that, I guess, gets me to the point of having a few words and a little bit of music. And then it's like a sort of a stacking system almost, a collage-y building of both things kind of inform each other. The music influences how the words go, and the words influence how the music goes. And so it happens like that. But it's slow. I'm such a slow coach. It takes me like months to write a song. I
Oh,
have to like
really?
play it over and over again. And it's funny because my songs are quite short. They're quite simple. They're quite repetitive. And it's not anything, but it's not, I don't do Bohemian Rhapsodies. But for me to sort of feel like I've chosen the right words and to feel like I've got the structure and the sort of energy right, it takes me a lot of playing. I kind of have to play them live, really, before they're finished in order for me to know.
Is it because you're a perfectionist, or is it just you're letting it the energy flow?
I don't think I'm a perfectionist because I like accidents and I like chance and I like just sort of chaos. But I do also like it being as good as I can make it. Like, I'm quite fussy about the words I use. Like, so I'm not gonna, yeah, I don't want to settle. I don't want to sort of compromise on something that isn't as good as I would like it to be. So I guess that's maybe partly why it takes a long time.
It's actually, if in a certain way, each song is one of your children, so to speak, and you have to
It's
be,
something that gets sent out, a spore of some description, a sort of seed or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Then how long did it, so your new album was just released.
Yeah.
So how long did it take for this album to be completed, if it takes you a while to complete one song?
Well, I guess probably I can sort of start counting from when the last one came out in 2021. I mean, 2020, sorry. No, 2020. Maybe it came out in 21. Yes, because it was early 2020 that the world sort of shut down, wasn't it? So then the album came out in 2021. Anyway, whatever. Since the last album came out, slowly writing and gathering bits together. And then once I'd had enough songs, and last October, me and the band went and kind of had a residency in West Cork in Ireland, where we just like bashed the songs into the right shape, and then recorded them in last December in Bristol. So that's what's that? Couple of years.
Well, that's not too long. I mean,
Yeah, could be worse.
I mean, when you said a few months, I thought, okay, it was like 10 months, 10 years in between the two albums, but that's okay. It's not too
Yeah, it's all right. Could be worse. The record label were okay with that gap.
bad. So tell us more about the album, about the songs. What are they about? Are there any favorites or?
Yeah, let me see. So I guess the album, it ended up being quite a personal album. I started off not seeing that coming. I sort of thought that it would be more of a sort of a general contemplation of the state of things and things that I've been thinking about outside of my life. But then it turned out to be very much a inside of my life type of album. But I mean, I think both things are always true. That's the thing with sort of words writing and songwriting. You always get this kind of all things are true all at once kind of thing that happens. So yeah, quite a personal album, quite a difficult time, quite a sort of extreme crab shell shedding, it feels like. And so the kind of writing and making of the album felt a bit like that. And now that it's out, it feels like I'm growing the new crab shell. And it's still a bit soft if you poke it, but it's gonna be stronger and bigger eventually.
So, I've spoken to a number of artists. I mean, and would you agree that songwriting is a form of therapy in a certain way?
Yeah, in that anything that's good for you is therapy.
Yes.
Because you're processing stuff. I mean, I guess also, yeah, it's good for you, so it's therapy, but also you're processing stuff. You're using words and you're thinking about things and untangling stuff. Like for me, that's kind of how I find out about things is songwriting. It's how I find out what I think. Often I don't have an answer. It just end results in a question. Like I feel like a lot of my songs just end up being questions more than kind of statements or answers. But I definitely feel like I'd be a less healthy person if I didn't write songs. So yeah, probably that mean does that mean it is therapy?
Yes, I think so. And also, it's for some people, it's a form of journaling, but in a different way, creating a song
Yeah.
and
And it's
then.
just kind of part of our nutrition. It's part of our primary nutrition. We need it to sort of stay healthy. It's like an apple a day.
Yes.
You also need to sort of sing a song a day.
Yes. Well, I mean, the singing and the music that they say bring the endorphins to the brain and that happy
Yeah.
drug. So absolutely, completely
Yeah,
get
because there's
that.
so many layers to it, isn't it? There's the writing process, which
Yes.
is really crucial and sort of helpful and healthy. And then there's just the physical experience of singing and playing music. And I sort of forget to do it. Just stupid. I know that it makes me happier and healthier, and I don't do it every day. It's only when I go on tour that I'm like sort of, oh wow, this feels amazing. I'm singing every day and it's really good. But yeah,
So when
things
you're
to try.
not touring and you're just in that period between, are you not
Yeah.
singing every day? Are you listening to music or are you busy with
No,
other
I
things?
mean, I wish I was singing every day, but yeah, I guess, when you're you know what it's like being self-employed, there's just admin to do and then life
Yes.
happens and there's like people ask you favors to do and things like that. And so it's normal. That's life. But part of life is mastering your own time and like when to do things that are really good for you and to sort of keep you healthy. And that is something that I go in and out of. Habit, good and bad habits with like sometimes,
Okay.
I'll have a little phase of like, yeah, going swimming every day, great. And then I'll have a little phase of like, yeah, doing a bit of singing every day. And then I'll fall off the bicycle and then have to get back on again.
Funny you say bicycles. I'm a spinning instructor,
Oh, nice, great.
so that's my release for
How often do people fall off their spinning bikes?
not very often. But the funny
Good,
thing is
good.
that I'm an instructor, and so a lot of my friends and colleagues tease me. I'm an instructor, but I've actually never learned how to ride a bike. I don't know how to ride a normal bike.
Oh, that's great.
Because my
I
class
think
is
that's
like
a perfect scenario for that.
they think it's mad. Like my class is each week, like I bring in dumbbells, we do boxing, different things. And the thought
Yeah.
of being on a bicycle for 3 or 4 hours doing a race or whatever, it's like, no, thank you. Just my
Oh,
bandwidth
great.
doesn't reach, my attention is not that
Yeah.
far.
Amazing, amazing. But when you're outside, your attention span just gets filled with all the stuff you gotta like get out of the way of and look at.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
Oh, I really love feeling of exchange and connection with the rest of the people in the room. There's the audience, and that's quite a powerful sort of energy exchange that happens. And then there's the band and just playing with like people that you love who make music that you love is incredible. And for, so for me, kind of playing live is possibly, if I had to sort of rank the different ingredients of being a musician, it might be my favorite part of the job because I love traveling. I love meeting people and sort of having a sort of unexpected and you never know how it's going to go exchange with them. And again, I guess that feeling of sharing something. Yeah, it's really great. I like it.
So I've got a point of discussion. I have this discussion with a lot of artists. So I'm that person who's right in front, who's dancing, who's being there, being present in the moment. And I notice a lot of people around me have got their cell phones out. They're tweeting, they're twerking, they're threading, whatever. They're taking pictures, they're taking videos. If I'm the receiving end of that, do you find that it takes away from the connection, or it's just where society is at the moment?
Yeah, I guess with those particular people that aren't, it's a two-way thing, isn't it? So, you know, you can feel which members of the audience are connecting with you and then you connect back with them. But I'm not going to sort of force myself on anyone who's like texting a mate or whatever. I don't, you know, they can do what they want. I mean, I don't think it's ever happened to me that a whole audience has been texting. Well, actually, that's not true. I've definitely played gigs where people haven't been paying attention, whatever they've been doing, chatting, texting, you know, stuff like that. And I just think that's fair enough because I can still have a nice time with my
Yes.
musicians. Sometimes there's usually there's one at least one person in the audience who's like into it, and that's enough really. I don't think yeah, we can't force people to be into it. All you can do is sort of offer what you do at a
Yeah.
gig, and then that's and then the magic happens when people sort of connect back or not,
I mean,
I
I
guess.
suppose the thing is that they are there. They wouldn't have been there if they didn't want to.
Yeah, I mean, there's always gigs that are like free to get in, or there's a bar in the room, or it's a wedding, or whatever, you know. So there's always going to be moments when people are like, what the fuck is this? Like, we don't want to listen to this, you know. But I also think that that's okay. Different type of gigs happen. I think it's really important to have all the different types of gigs to remind
Yes.
yourself that, you know, put yourself in an open mic situation, and all of a sudden you're just one of the other open mic
Yes.
wannabes. Do you know what I mean? It's just context, you know, it's like, we played at the Royal Albert Hall last year and it was amazing. But it's because you're in the Royal Albert Hall, all of a sudden you're a band that plays in the Royal Albert Hall. And then the
Yes.
next day, you're playing in a sort of toilety, sticky box venue,
Yes.
you know. And so it's just,
It's a way
it's
of
good. You've got to
grounding, I
have,
suppose, keeping the.
definitely, it's totally a way of grounding. And then you can connect with the people differently. Every room, every shape, every different size and shape room and different audience that comes makes a different kind of ecosystem for that sort of exchange to happen in. And it's just really great when it's different every time.
So I love myself a CD. I still get my
Oh, me
CDs, a
too.
budget for my CDs every month. I like the booklet. For me, it's an energy exchange between myself and you guys for all the hard work, creative, et cetera, that you do. Physical is making a massive comeback. As we know, vinyls, cassettes, CDs are growing and growing and growing again. I'm very excited about that. But we also have these digital platforms where people consume music. Your thoughts on the digital and the music environment and ecosystem where we are currently?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because each one has its ecological repercussions that aren't ideal. So it kind of depends a little bit. Because, I mean, the way I see it and the way I kind of go about my listening practice is I love listening to tapes, CDs, and records. And the things I love and listen to over and over again, I'll get on those formats. Tapes are usually like mixtapes or, you know, not, I don't buy very many tapes, but I do sometimes. Anyway, records and CDs I do buy. And then for stuff that I'm just sort of finding out about or being recommended or just giving a listen to, then I will stream it and listen to it online. And then if I like it enough, then I'll buy it. But it's tricky, isn't it? It's really hard how to consume anything in this day and age because there's so many of us. Like it wouldn't work if every single person on the planet only bought vinyl or only bought CDs. But it also wouldn't work if every single person on the planet was only ever streaming music because servers are a nightmare. Like it's just sort of a big chugging monster that's sort of, you know, melting all the ice caps or whatever. So it's really hard to know what to do. What I also actually enjoy is Bandcamp because you can download the files and then you can listen to it offline, and I just feel happier when I'm not connected to the internet.
Yes.
So that's I like that sort of thing as well. I like not being online But if I do have to listen to it in a digital format, then I can. It's yeah, it's really hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of landfill out there, and a lot of, I think we need to sort of, yeah, think about how responsible we're being. It's hard, isn't it? David Attenborough, I feel like I heard an interview with him once, and someone said, "What is the one advice you could give to the world to, in order to make things better?" And he just says, "Don't waste."
Yes.
Like, waste is a problem. So if we just bear that in mind, and everything we do and everything we buy, we just really try and avoid waste. Like, don't buy stuff you don't need, and don't buy stuff that's in packaging you don't need. Don't buy a record you don't need. Don't leave a load of HD streaming stuff all the time that you don't need. Just like, if we can downsize this, what we need, I
For
think
me,
we
like with my
less.
CDs, I mean, I've got a number, I don't buy all CDs, but I've got my favorites, and then they're in their CD case. I'm the only one who's allowed to touch them. It's they are listened to. So like I keep them clean and pristine and all that kind of stuff. It's everything's locked nicely, so it doesn't go to waste in the sense that I'm keeping them, like golden, so to
Yeah, and it
speak.
brings you joy, and they're
Yeah.
in good condition, and they're, it's an archive.
Yeah.
I'm someone that's really, I've got quite archivist tendencies. Like, I always want to sort of keep things, file them away, and refer back to them. So yeah, I totally get that. And also, one thing I've been thinking about recently is that people are really into, these days, there seems to be a lot of pressure or something, buzz, whatever it is, about not having things and minimal living and whatever, which is totally fine. But I think the realistic offshoot of that is that it kind of encourages this landfill mentality of like, I'm not going to keep that. Even if I need it again one day, I'll just buy another one because I don't need it today. Like, there's this kind of
Yes.
like, in order to have a sort of empty house, I mean, I'm saying that, look, you can see what's behind me, all the things that I might need one day.
Yes.
But I do feel like there's a balance to be found between, obviously, we don't want to consume and have things we don't need, but I also think that there's a lot to be said for having things that you can use and mend and like replace and stuff,
Yes.
rather than just go and buy a new one, order it on Amazon. You know, I've got a lovely, empty, minimalist sort of designer house, and I don't need to worry about anything because I can just order it on the internet. Like, that doesn't feel like a very sustainable, responsible way to behave.
So moving back to the music now.
Yes, let's do that.
I love this game. And I recognize if I had to ask you this question in 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 months, 5 weeks, I know your answer would be different every time. And I
Exactly. That's always
understand
a
that.
good small print to mention.
So if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we have finished this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Okay. After this conversation, five songs. What am I listening to recently? I just this morning I got into a total Steve Malcolmus groove. So today I'm feeling quite Steve Malcolmusly. So I would probably press play on, I'm gonna ask, I have to ask Jesse what it's called. What, or you might know what it's called. What's the song that goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- down. Anyway, it's such a great song. I love it. Da 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 da. That one. I can't remember the words. Da da
Okay.
da
We'll get the
da.
listening audience to Google it and find it for
There we are.
themselves.
Shazam what I just did, and you'll find it, no problem. So that song will be number one,
Yes.
and I've got to think of some other ones.
Yeah.
Also, I'm really into this French band at the moment called Belvoir, and it's a duo, and they're really political and really high energy and just make such exciting, great, groovy music. And there's a song of theirs called Les Incendies, and it's got such a great bass line and it's brilliant. So that would be number two.
Okay.
Number three, what would it be? It would be Heart Emoji by Richard Dawson, because I just think he's a genius. His melodies, his guitar playing, it feels like he's playing the guitar with your ribs. It so sort of gets you right in your core. And he's just a master storyteller. And this song in particular, just a really nice kind of looking at someone's life through their eyes. And it's really sad and touching and moving, but beautiful. So that's number three, was it?
Yeah, two more.
Okay, great. Well done. So I've got to keep count. Number four would be probably Joni Mitchell, Raised on Robbery, because yesterday I listened to a radio program about Joni Mitchell, and it reminded me that once I performed this song at an event in Bristol, and I was like, I've got to relearn that song. And so I'd put that on because I want to relearn Raised on Robbery. Because she's also a great storyteller and so good at, she's really good at starting a song with like a line like, he said, and then the whole song is just like someone else's story for,
Yes,
through
it
their
is.
voice. And it's so lovely. Number five, it would be, oh, I don't know what it's called because it's in Welsh, but I'm just going to quickly look it up and see if I
Okay,
can
sure.
work out how to pronounce it. But it's a Super Furry Animals song off that album that I think is called Mung, Mwng. And it's got such a brilliant, or like a little reed organ, ching 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 ching, and it sort of messes around with where the first beat of the bar is in a way that I love. Not that one. Oh, yeah, it is that one. So it's called Pan Dar War. I don't know. Look, that's how you spell it. PANDDAW apostrophe R. WAWR, and it is a total tune, and I and it's great. And at the end, it's sort of the first beat of the bar shifts. They just add a little beat in so that the placement of the organ shifts, and it is such an uplifting, amazing moment. It's great. I saw them play it live at Green Mound Festival when they played. Oh my God, I was in pieces.
Cool list. I need to check some of those out. I don't know all of them, so I'm going to check some of them out. So thank you.
Okay.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Well, I think just sort of one thing that I feel like everyone needs to always remember, and this is a big assumption because people might already remember this, so I don't want to assume that people aren't remembering this, but just in case we've forgotten, because often I forget, just compassion. Just like, you don't know what other people are going through in their life, and if they're a bit of a dick, it's probably because they're having a really hard time. So you just gotta be kind and patient. And don't waste things. David Attenborough.